OTB Sports Golf Weekly with Now TV. Watch Sky Sports on the Now TV Sky Sports Pass and watch BT Sport and Premier Sports on the Sports Extra Pass.
Have you seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner for caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course he would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
I was waiting for Joe Malloy to come in and introduce us, and then I realized, no, he's not here, that I have to be the presenter. What a wonderful start to Golf Weekly. Good afternoon, everybody. It's just the two of us so far, myself and Peter Lawrie. Gary Murphy is going to be with us in a moment. That's right, we've got rid of the bluffers. We got rid of Malloy, Davenport, McIntyre, these guys who talk the talk, but when it comes to it, they don't walk the walk. But we've got two actual real-life golfers on Golf Weekly today, which, as always, is with thanks to Now TV. You can stream the start of the Premier League, Serie A, and EFL Championship on Now TV. Your sport on your terms. Peter Lawrie, good afternoon.
Hello, Nathan. How are you? Good to have you here, Nathan. As the boss.
The boss. Well, yeah. I like to think I'm always the boss, but I like Joe to take the glory sometimes. Keeps his ego nice and healthy. You know how it is. You know, it's like when you let McGrain win on a Wednesday, you know, just keep him happy. Keep him happy. When the real business starts, you show him who's boss. Yeah. Gary Murphy is going to be with us as well. We're just having some technical difficulties. So it could well just be the two of us for the next hour, which could be interesting in itself. We'll do the Peter Lawrie interview. We haven't done a Peter Lawrie interview since you retired. And we were the first time I ever met you. What are we at? 5 years ago now, is it?
Yeah.
Probably is about 5 years ago. And you told us you were addicted to coke.
2016, I retired.
Okay, so 4 years ago.
Yeah. 4 years ago.
That was a pretty shocking day. What level of coke are you on at the moment?
Yeah, one or two. One or two.
One or two a day?
Drinking it, of course.
Yeah. Okay, drinking it. I hear you. So there's a good bit to talk about. We'll have our US Open preview in full next week, but we are going to talk about Dustin Johnson, FedEx Cup champion. Is he an overachiever? Is he an underachiever? Or, you know, is he just actually doing what he should be doing? We'll talk as well about Shane Lowry back in action this week, his prep for the US Open, and there's a few other bits and pieces going on as well. But we do have a competition to get to, because on this week's show, we're giving you the chance to win a 3-month Now TV Sky Sports Pass. So you'll be able to watch all of next week's US Open from Winged Foot. Tell us who won last year's US Open. A lot of thought goes into this. Tell us who won last year's US Open. Tweet your answer to both at Golf Weekly OTB and at Now TV Ireland. And we will pick a winner on Monday. And you'll have that in time for the US Open next week. When you were off, Peter, and Gary stepped in to rave reviews. Finally, someone who knows what he's talking about.
Well, see, Murph has a lot of experience at this. He's been on the TV. He's been out there on the fairways, talking away to the players and watching them play. I'm kind of sitting in the sidelines, you know what I mean?
Do you want to ask him about that, how he got that gig and you didn't?
I never applied for it.
Is there an application processed?
No, look, it's literally like going back on tour again, but you're not getting paid the big bucks, or you don't have the ability to win the big bucks. And that's no disrespect to any of the commentators, but when you went out on tour, it was like, you know, you bought a ticket for the lottery and you had the big lottery prize at the end of it. I had done my time traveling, and with a young family, I was in particularly wanted to stay at home. So going back to do commentary and stuff like that was like, would literally be go back on the tour. And plus, when I finished up, I really struggled to even watch golf, to be around golf, and I've spoken about it before. It was like losing somebody in your family, and you know, you just don't want to be back out there again, really. So that's why I stayed away from it.
Were there many opportunities? Now, I don't know if we'll get, so it may well just be the two of us. I don't know if we'll get Gary, yeah. But did he ever take Damien McGrain's place in the bed beside you, literally?
I'll tell you a funny story. Myself and Gary, and I hope he's listening to this, we shared an apartment in New Zealand. We played in the New Zealand Open, and it was one of these apartments where it had a balcony on it, and you could literally go out one door and in the other one. So one of the evenings, of course, I decided that having had copious amounts of Coca-Cola, sleep was not becoming of me. And I was giddy. So I decided in my wisdom to let's play a practical joke on Gary Murphy. Murph was, you know, always good for it.
How many people were in the apartment?
Oh, just myself and Murph.
Okay.
So I kind of was very quiet, went out in the balcony, waited for Gary. I could hear him. He went into the toilet. So I went into his room and got into the closet. So it was pitch dark now. And I remember him coming back in. You could hear him, and Murph was, let's say he could breathe pretty heavily. So you'd know exactly where he was. So you could hear him getting into the bed. So I decided to scratch the closet door, you know, and all of a sudden you could hear nothing. And then I came out with the whoa like that. And poor El Gary was, he wasn't the better for it for quite some time.
I'm not surprised.
No, but it was.
I thought he was about to be assaulted.
Yes, he was. Yeah, but it was a bit of crack. So yeah, myself and Murph, he shared a few times with us. I remember one of the years we were playing Challenge Tour, and none of us had any money, and we did a three person room in Morocco, and it was one of the times where myself and Damien. Or I think maybe it was Gary who got sponsored by Nutrigrain, these Kellogg's Nutrigrain bars. So of course McGrain ate them for the whole week. He was delighted with himself. He didn't need to go for dinner. He had all Murph's Nutrigrain bars. So yeah, look, Gary was thereabouts each week. So we had a bit of fun.
We're going to have to let Gary go. We'll get him on. We will sort something out for next week for our US Open preview, and we'll have him on perfect quality video line. So it is the listener's worst nightmare, Peter. It is just me and you.
And you. Thanks, Nathan. I actually don't think it's that bad. We don't have you, to listen to.
Just going back to, I'm always obsessed with the Coke thing because, yeah. Firstly, I don't understand how you're not twice the size of me having drank that much Coke. But also, I thought previously you said that, you know, it didn't really have a massive effect on your everyday life. But if you couldn't sleep at night because you were drinking that much Coke,
I know. That's... I could always sleep. It was just a matter of, you know what I mean, about time when I went to sleep. It was just one of those evenings. It was warm and we'd had a bit. We'd back for dinner. We were probably late or whatever, but it was just one of those practical jokes. But no, Coke didn't have much effect. Like, I could drink it in the warmest of climates, no problem. I used to drink it in Malaysia, Coke and a Mars bar, in the hottest climates. And it wouldn't bother me in the slightest.
How many Mars bars?
Oh, no, just the one.
Okay.
A couple of Cokes and one Mars bar.
What was your eating routine during a round?
Normally, the Mars bar would come out after 9 holes, a bit like everybody else, really. You
would
know
that
what
be
I mean?
It?
That would be it, yeah.
Would you have a sandwich?
No.
Did you ever change your routine?
No. Oh, it worked for a while, didn't it? So I just left it alone. But like every other amateur golfer out there, you know, that searches in the bag for something to eat after 9 holes, there's probably a bottle of something there in the bag and a Mars bar or a Twix or whatever it may be. And I have to go and eat
a rotten banana from 9 months ago, as I found on Saturday when I took out my clubs for the first time in 9 months.
Yuck.
I should tell the listeners I went down to the Spawell Golf Academy where I was met at the door by a smiling proprietor. Wonderfully warm welcome as always. I went up the stairs. I checked out your
Top Tracer.
Played Kiwi Island. Yeah. Now, listen, I understand the way you can't control where the electricity pylons are on Spawell, okay. But it's very off-putting because on Shot Tracer, to shoot straight on Shot Tracer, you need to go left of the left pole. Yet my natural eye line is that I'm thinking I'm hitting a good shot if I'm hitting it straight through the two poles. But it turns out that's miles right. And I shot 126 around Keogh Island.
But see, Nathan, there is a big problem with this one. And I have to tell you, people who come up and use the Top Tracer, okay, there's a list of instructions there of how to use it. And we try and tell everybody how to use it. But there is a thing called range map, and you just click on the range map and you pick your target that you want to aim at. So obviously you didn't do this, and somebody before you was aiming left of the pole.
Ah.
So the next time you come up, hit range map and pick your target.
Who knew? Well, why didn't you explain that to me? Like, considering you seem to get a lot of Golf Weekly listeners, or half the listeners now going, oh, well, if I'd known that.
Yeah.
Things would have been totally different.
I tell everybody, I said, first question I ask you, have you used TopTracer? Yes. I said, okay, perfect. Well done. I said, do you know what you're doing? Absolutely. And off they go. So if somebody says they haven't used it, I will say the most important thing is range map and pick your target.
All right. I had a similar enough experience to Joe Malloy where you just roundly abused me while I was there for how terrible I was. And then Tim Rice, the great Tim Rice, took me aside for half an hour, told me I had such a beautiful golf swing. I had very little to do, just a couple of little things, you know, get the left arm in position, all that jazz. And I left with a big smile on my face. So that's all that matters.
There you go. Well, Tim, look, is a very good coach. He coaches here out of Spawell. He's one of the other 8 coaches here, but he's very good. So if people want to book a lesson, give us a call.
You love Tim them all equally. Let's talk about last weekend then. Dustin Johnson, FedEx Cup champion, all that money, $15 million. Funnily enough, looking online on Sunday night, it seems that on the American TV coverage, there was no mention at any stage of the money. Bizarrely. So obviously they'd made a decision because of everything that's going on in the world right now that morally, maybe it's not the best thing to be saying we're going to make one player 15 million richer. So having spent all season telling us what the FedEx Cup is about, when it came to the actual finale and you have the likes of Xander Schauffele and John Rahm on the 18th and you're hearing on Sky, well, this is worth $1 million or this is worth $2 million. On the American coverage, there was none of that. There was no mention whatsoever of what their finishing position was going to mean to them.
But didn't that happen a good while ago to Peter Costas? He was interviewing the players. He walked off the 18th, and in his ear he was being told, "Make sure you mention that's an X. You know, you've just won 600 FedEx points." And Peter Costas goes, "No, I'm going to tell him he's just got his ticket to the Masters, which is far more important than your FedEx." But his producer thought otherwise, and hence Peter Costas is no longer in that position.
So Dustin Johnson, 13 seasons in a row he's won. Nobody has won more times on the PGA Tour since he came on tour. 6 playoff events now, 6 World Golf Championships, a major, 9 top fives in majors, 3 wins since the restart of golf. And still people are asking questions, you know, has he done enough? Is he underachieving?
No. Look, this guy is seriously talented. He's seriously talented with a golf club in his hand. He seems to be able to play golf like it's just natural to him. He doesn't have the perfect golf swing. He certainly has the stature of a golfer and nearly of a male model, let's put it be honest. You know, he's slim, he's tall, he's athletic. He could play any sport, really, with his body type. But golf seems to be the thing for him. And after winning the $15 million, he just gave it a little fist pump and let's go. You know, load up the jet. We're out of here. So he's a remarkable character. He's been out there, as you said, for a long time. And look, seriously talented and deserves everything he's got.
There was a long period, probably the first 7-8 years when he came on tour, when he was just seen as a bomber. Yeah, you know, he was sort of in that Bubba Watson, JB Holmes type category. And he had this epiphany where he realizes, you know what, if I was to practice my short game, who knows what could happen? So turns up in Hawaii one January, I spend a couple of weeks practicing his short game. And lo and behold, he's one of the best short game players in the world. He has the distance, he has the short game. And also, by and large, looks to be one of the best putters in the world. Like, what is the one weakness? What is there one thing when it comes to winged foot next week that's holding him back in terms of his game? Because I know you're going to say maybe his mentality, but in terms of his actual game, is there any weakness there at the moment?
Not that I can see, to be honest with you, at all. He puts it exceptionally well. His reading of the greens was superb. Now, I know he brings in the brother, But half the time, I think he brings in the brother just for the brother to have something to do, because he doesn't seem to listen to him or you know, he's looking at his book, see where the green reading book, and seems to be able to pick the line beautifully. You're right, though.
I saw a quote on his brother, somebody put up online yesterday. It must have been maybe from his college yearbook or something. And he was asked, what's your favorite book? He says, the one I don't have to read.
Yeah. Well, look, it runs in the family, I think. But what I would say about Dustin is, though, he did exactly what you've said. He found that there was a weakness in his game. He found that if he could improve himself from inside 100 yards or 120 yards, he could be world number one. And he really has practiced and dialed in his yardages. He hits his wedges in very, very close. You'd rarely see him miss a green with a wedge. And
the biggest difference between himself and McIlroy?
Yes. Yeah, very much so. Because he has to get, he drives it as well as Rory. He's not frightened of the driver in any shape or form. Maybe you'd say his course management might be a little bit better than Rory. Possibly in certain ways. I don't think, did he hit driver off 18 at all during the week? I know he hit it a couple of times in the fairway with 3 wood.
I'm trying to think back to 18 on Sunday.
Yeah, I think his course management is quite good now. You know, the only thing you would say, he has put himself in a few positions where he should have won and didn't. And when it does get a little bit close, he does get a little bit jittery. But I think now that he's more comfortable in his surroundings now as world number one, as, you know, best player, and having won the FedEx, he won the previous week. I thought the most difficult thing on any tour is to win 2 weeks in a row. And that's what he did.
Did he though? Because, in what way? Well, because of the handicap system. So Xander Schauffele shot the lowest 4 rounds of the week. Like, this handicap system really doesn't work. It would have been a far better finale if it was just the actual leaderboard. It would have been a far tighter thing. So Justin Johnson played it very well. Didn't try anything spectacular. Didn't need anything spectacular because he knew he was so... So imagine Rory McIlroy comes out the first day, shoots 64, and everybody's starting at level par as normal. Mm. You got a far more exciting golf tournament than what we ended up with on Sunday night, which is just a bit of a procession. All right, there's 25 minutes where it looks like Dustin Johnson may have a bit of a wobble.
Yeah.
But well, you've ruled Coulthard out. You have 30 players, and essentially 20 of them are gone, if not more. 25 of them are gone before it even starts.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, when I looked at it and I saw that, you know, we were talking about it last week, that he had an 8-shot lead. Or was it an 8-shot lead? He had
maybe a 9-shot lead over Rory.
If he went out and shoots level par the first round and the guys shoot maybe 500 or 600, now there's a game on. But you see, that's the point.
So Rory did that. But right. Rory has his best round of the week. And still he at that stage, he's what? Five, six shots back. Mm. So you've had your best round of the week day one, and still you're 5-6 shots back. And you know Dustin Johnson's going to have a good round somewhere along the line.
Of course he is, yeah. Like, okay, well then how do you do it? Do you do it like the European Tour does it, and you just get to the, you know, the last tournament, the Race to Dubai in Dubai, and you just stack the fields by timesheet? You know, the leaders go out, are the, you know, the leading of the Order of Miracles out last, and the guy who's finished in 60th place goes out first. And then you just play.
They used to do that. So it's only in the last couple of years they changed to this handicap system, and I don't think it's for the better. Like, the obvious thing, but it's never going to happen on the PGA Tour, is you bring in some form of match play to finish it off. So even if you start the week with 30 players playing stroke play for the first 3 rounds, and maybe you have your handicap system there, so the guys who've been leading all summer get a bit of an advantage, but then your top 8 on Sunday, some sort of 4-hole shootout, quarterfinals, semifinals, final, boom, winner takes it all.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with you.
Like, I know that the TV companies don't enjoy match play because you end up, like, the World Match Play is one of the more deflating experiences because the Thursday of the World Match Play is, Wednesday of the World Match Play is the best day of it. And then by Sunday, there's one match and it's Rory against fest. John Ram, you're tuning in. But if it's not, it's pretty dull. But actually, if you're starting with the eight and it's only some sort of four-hole sprint, you can still get the drama. And it's like what they have at the moment isn't particularly exciting. Like, the reason for the playoffs, the reason for this, even though it doesn't fit into the way golf is set up, is that to have this big grand finale for the American viewer. And they don't have that now.
No, they had it the week prior with John Rahm and Dustin. That was the big one. They wish they had that as the FedEx, you know, the putts at the end, the putts in the playoff, etc. That was the most dramatic finish that we've seen all year. And like anything, you'd love that to be the last day of the, you know, the FedEx, but you can bring in other sports in this, and, you know, sometimes you can get the greatest semi-final of a World Cup ever, and then the final is, you know, it's boring, etc. So, you know, it's very hard to do, really. It's very hard to get it right all the time.
Yeah. Dustin Johnson has a week off this week. He'll head to Winged Foot next week. You just hope he can get himself into contention again. Like, he has thrown majors away all the way, thinking back to obviously Pebble Beach when Graham McDull won, Royal St. George when Darren Clark won. He's been there and countless opportunities since then. Every week we seem to say there's a clear best player in the world right now. Last week it's John Rahm. This week it's Dustin Johnson. A week before that it's Justin Thomas. We'll talk a lot more about it next week, but
yeah,
who's your
guy right
now?
It just goes to show you how strong golf is, though. Mm. And, you know, I probably am one of these guys who probably needs to realize that. And when I give out about Rory not producing, like, it actually is damn hard to win out here or out on tour, especially with the standard that there is. And if you make one mistake, you know, your tournament's finished.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, also, the flip of that is when we're talking about Rory and he'll go, oh, he's going to win more majors. He'll get to 7 or 8. He's got to get up past all these guys. And all these players think they can get to 3 or 4. So there ain't enough of them to go around is the problem.
No.
What about Rory then last week? Comes flying out of the blocks. A new man, a father, nappy factor, all that jazz. And again, like, he's in a difficult position, an unfair position. He's so far behind. And has that terrible moment where you can play some stunning golf on Thursday, but the only thing anyone will remember is the video on Twitter that has about 8 million views now of the shot you hit 3 yards.
Yeah, that was a bad decision. But there again, what would we have said if he tried to chip it backwards? You know, how bad would that have looked? Look, the decision off the tee to hit driver was just crazy, in my opinion. You know, he can reach down there, simple as. He could hit 3-1 iron on the green. Look, he probably thought it was, the lie was good enough to get something on it. And just the club got snagged up and in the water she goes. I'd say a lot of people were licking their lips on come Friday morning when they put the money on Rory for his, you know, the baby factor. And it certainly was looking that way after one round, but I don't believe in this baby factor thing at all. Your mind.
Well, the stats prove it. It's not a matter of opinion. The stats prove it.
Yeah, but I'm allowed an opinion.
Can my opinion be that when I was in Spawell on Saturday on Shot Tracer, that in my opinion I hit a great shot, but Shot Tracer's telling me that I went in the water in Kiwa Island yet again? No, my opinion counts for nothing. It's in the water.
Okay.
Can't argue the facts.
So the stats do prove it, yes?
The stats do prove it, but obviously not for every golfer. So he has a week off at home now. Spend some time with the family. Get up to New York for next week and somehow try and put 4 rounds together. It's the big story, obviously, around the US Open is that there's going to be no Brooks Koepka. Second last year, winner the two previous years at this knee injury that has been at times underplayed by himself. And at times looked like it's going to be a serious concern for the next couple of years. Obviously, it's now the latter. this is a big issue. As much as he tried to hide it at times, to miss out on the US Open means, are we going to see him again this year?
I think at best we might see him at the Masters, but it certainly doesn't look that way. And your knees are so important in golf that he puts so much, you know, stress and strain on your knees. You know, I think you're right. He could be out for the rest of the year.
And I guess with your knee as well, you're going to do whatever possible to avoid having an operation.
If he has an operation, he's out for 6 months.
Yeah. So he may be rested for 6 weeks. And
so if he's out for 6 months, he's missed three majors.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not good.
You know, no.
And it's frustrating because, listen, we talk about who the best player in the world is. We'd be spending half an hour chatting about Koepka next week. He'd be doing his press conference. He'd be saying, yeah, DJ, maybe this. John Rahm, maybe that. But who's the guy? You know, now it works out perfectly. Now they have a good reason why they don't have his poster anywhere near the course. And they go, oh, we knew you weren't going to be there. It's fine. We knew you weren't going to be there.
His caddy, Ricky, he should caddy. How many US Opens Brooks has won? Two, hasn't he?
Two, yeah.
Two. So Ricky could go out there and caddy for somebody and he could be a three-time winner of a US Open.
Well, yeah, that's do a bones on it.
Yeah, do a bones on it, yeah. Rory's won it once, hasn't he? Has Rory won the US Open once? Yeah. Ricky could get onto Rory's bag all of a sudden, win another US Open.
Yeah, that would cause some ructions in the Northern Irish fraternity somehow, which is all they need. Unless you heard something, of course, when you were talking to Rory's manager, that you're not stopped throwing us under the bus.
No, that was funny. Yeah. And by the way, I didn't like that tweet.
Why?
Treacherous weasel. That was just
that was libelous. That was Joe. I would never say such a thing. Okay. I took it in the spirit it was intended. That was Joe. Right. This week, by the way, it's the Safeway Open in Napa Valley. Siwoo Kim is the favorite. You've got Brendan Steele, Phil Mickelson, Shane Lowry, fourth favorite at 20-1, Sergio Garcia, Jordan Spieth in the field as well. If they can see this tournament through to the very end, because it's in around Napa Valley, just north of San Francisco. There's, I'm sure people have seen, huge bushfires and around San Francisco. There were pictures from yesterday of around midday at the golf course where it was like it was midnight. It was pitch black because of the fumes. So there's obviously a danger with that, but also as to how close it ends up getting to the course and just whether they have enough daylight. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. But listen, Shane Lowry, a little bit of an opportunity. And he was doing a press conference on Tuesday. He was, you know, better group, fourth favourite. Might just spark him on at the right time.
Hopefully so. Reading between the lines and reading some of the stuff that he's put out there, I think he's struggling a little bit. You know, he's been away from home. Family are now back in Ireland. And, you know, this will be his last week in America for, I think, a little bit of time.
Well, he might play the old US Open there next week, Peter.
Sorry, after the US Open. Apologies, after the US Open.
And he's back then because the Irish Open is on the week after that. We don't know yet whether we're going to be at the Irish Open. We're not sure actually if it's worth our while going because there's pretty limited media access. You might actually get better media access by not being there because they don't want people coming into contact with the players. You have to go inside this European Tour bubble for the week. And it's not going to be like a regular Irish Open. There's going to be no buzz around the place, unfortunately. But Shane Lowry is playing and he'll be the main attraction. I don't think it's too many big names. I assume Harrington is going to play in all likelihood. Some of the other Irish players.
Yeah, I don't know. I was talking to Ronan Flood last night and he didn't tell me either whether he was playing or not playing.
Jesus, come on. This is what you're here for. Exclusives.
I know. Yeah, well, look, you know, sometimes you're not allowed to break confidences. I don't know whether Porrick is going to play again. Is there going to be a quarantine issue? Whether I think Porrick could play.
No, he can, Northern Ireland. Within the island of Ireland, you're okay.
Yeah, but the next one is over in Wentworth, isn't it?
Right.
The week after that is in Wentworth.
Well, they seem to be able to make all sorts of exceptions for professional sports people, it turns out.
Right. Okay. I know Shane is not playing at Wentworth, which is probably disappointing to the European Tour, being their flagship event.
Yeah, listen, I think everyone's accepting that players are going to have to do what's right for them, and I'm sure he wants to spend some time with the family. As you say, I think they've been back in Ireland for 6-7 weeks at this stage while he's been stuck over in America. What does Ronan Flood do for the last 6 months?
That's a good question. Probably he has a young family, so he could get on your dad cast.
Exactly. We should get him on. We should get him on this podcast. Let's try and get him on this podcast next week.
No problem.
Text him.
I'll say it to Ronan. Yeah,
because remember there last week where he said we can get Rory anytime we want. But let's start with Ronan Flood, and then we go to Rory in a couple of weeks' time. So you see if you can get Ronan on, because he'd be out worth chatting to anyways. Anything else? The Anna Invitational is on this week. No Sofia Popov, even though Charlie Hull had to pull out of the tournament because she tested positive for COVID. Yet still, they couldn't find a place for the most recent major champion, who is in America right now. It's insane, but we've given out about that enough.
There's one thing, actually, I noticed. They're talking about the Irish Open. There has been no ladies' Irish Open for quite some time. I was listening to, is it Leona Maguire?
Well, you're going to hear from Leona Maguire in just a moment, because Joe was talking to her earlier in the week. We're going to play that full interview in just a moment. What was she saying in what you heard?
That, look, you know what I mean? She was saying that there's been no Irish Open for the last, was it 4 years, 5 years? And, you know, for all the money that, you know, is pumped into golf, really, there should be an Irish Open. For the ladies, and they, you know, it would be nice to be held in a decent golf course. So I you know, be fully behind it, and you know, hope that there is companies out there that COVID have been, you know, beneficial to, to put up some money to bring in an Irish Open when things settle down and the traveling end of things.
Yeah, it is a real shame that they didn't capitalize on the success of the Solheim Cup, because you could see in the previous 2 or 3 years, there was an appetite for ladies golf. They were getting big crowds down to Killeen Castle. All the top European golfers were there. A lot of the American golfers were there because they wanted to come over and test the grounds before the Solheim Cup. And it comes to this big crescendo and then nothing. And that's, I guess, unfortunately collided with the Ladies European Tour pretty much grinding to a halt as well. It's not just Ireland. Yeah. There's very few tournaments anywhere. So, yeah, it is a real shame that there is no Ladies Irish Open. But, yeah, and you'd worry as well post-COVID whether that's possible. Anything else you want to touch on?
No, one of the small little things I just looked at there, we were speaking about it earlier on, and again, I will preface this that I know nothing. This is just a hunch. The Ryder Cup is due to go to Italy in 2023. Not a tournament has been played on that golf course as of yet. I don't know whether it's finished or not, but they're just announcing that they're going to a new venue this year for the Italian Open. It's a certain massive contrast in what the Italian Open was going to be when it was announced that Italy was getting the Ryder Cup. They were meant to have it as a Rolex event. They were meant to have it as $6-8 million tournaments riding up to the Ryder Cup. So I've always said that I will be shocked to see the Ryder Cup in Italy when the golf course hadn't been built, and I think other golf courses were being put on alert to go, you know, just in case. But I haven't seen anything, but it's just something that is a noteworthy, let's put it that way.
Yeah, and well, the Irish Open isn't a Rolex Series event this year either. It's a totally different playing field.
Correct, yeah.
So I think, Adair Manor, 2027 now, is it?
It's this year.
It's now 2027. Hopefully it is. Everything turns around and they can have that in Italy. Peter, great stuff. Just the two of us. I thought it was brilliant. We didn't need Gary Murphy, and we certainly didn't need Fiona Joe.
No,
they just bring us down. Bring us down. I'll give you another chance to enter our competition though, because the US Open is on next week, and on this week's show we're giving you the chance to win a 3-month Now TV Sky Sports Pass to be able to watch all of next week's US Open from Winged Foot. To win, just tell us who won last year's US Open. I think I gave it away a bit earlier on the pod. Tweet your answer to both at Golf Weekly OTB and at Now TV Ireland, and we'll pick a winner on Monday. We'll get in touch with you and you'll have that pass so you can watch the US Open next week. We may try and do the pod maybe next Wednesday, as we usually do around majors, to get in early and give you plenty of build-up time. But we will give you more info on that next week. Let's not make any promises. Gary Murphy, brilliant, outstanding, didn't put a foot wrong. No controversy. We can't ask for any more from our former pros.
Yeah, and no beating down the door of any lawyers as of yet.
No, exactly. So, exactly. Yeah, once again, right. Peter, people will appreciate you all the more now.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, great stuff. Right. We are almost done, but do stick around because Leona Maguire has been talking to Joe Molloy, part of the 20 by 20 movement. Leona, obviously, on a professional tour right now and well worth listening to. Here's how that went.
Okay, so look, very happy to say we're joined by 20 by 20 and KPMG ambassador Leona Maguire. It follows the launch of the fifth and final chapter of the 20 by 20 movement, which is The Future for Women in Sport, Choose What's Next. And they have a range of mini documentaries out at the moment. They're well worth checking out. And they're pushing the question of the future by asking, all of us asking questions of ourselves and of society. Can we bring about greater equality and build a new norm for women in sport? Leona Maguire, you're very welcome. Nice to talk to you. How are things?
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot going on after a long period of quiet. You were at the Women's Open at Royal Troon a couple of weeks ago. Weather looked interesting.
Yeah, just a typical summer's week in Scotland, really, I suppose. That's kind of what you expect from a British Open. Four seasons, practice days were sunny and as calm as anything. And then, yeah, I think we got the tail end of that storm that was hitting Ireland. So, yeah, made for interesting golf, keeping the ball as low as possible on some of the holes. And I suppose that's what you can expect and nearly hope for a British Open.
I was watching from my couch with a warm cup of tea, relaxed and indoors, watching you all suffer. It made for some interesting watching because you'd had a bit of success in Troon before. I think you won the Scottish Amateur Open there maybe, 10, 11 years ago at this stage. So it was a course, obviously, that you liked. Wasn't easy. I think one player was under par on the Friday evening. I know you missed the cut. I'm sure that was a disappointment. How did you go? How did you find it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Royal Troon's, it's a great golf course. I always enjoyed my time going there. It was nice that we used to play the Helen Home there, and obviously watched Henrik Stenson win there a few years ago and that. And yeah, it definitely showed its teeth a few weeks ago when we were there. Had to stay out of the bunkers. And yeah, just a few holes probably cost me. Number 8 and number 11 were expensive holes for me. But I suppose that's some of those experiences that I'll sort of carry with me and hopefully learn if we go back again in the future.
How are you at dealing with the expensive holes? Like when you're walking to the 9th, are you just berating yourself and telling yourself what a terrible human being you are? Or do you manage to park it okay?
I suppose that's probably where my psychology degree probably comes in. And I suppose the caddy probably is sort of steps up there and kind of tries to get you back on track. And I suppose courses like Royal Troon and Lynx courses, you can't switch off for a minute. You very much have to sort of snap yourself back into action again. You can't let it compound. You very much have to sort of pick your shots around. So you can't really beat yourself up too much. But then again, it's easier said than done.
I would say it's especially easy to switch off in that weather when there's so much going on and there's a lot of thinking to be done. Generally, Leona, do you try and relax, you know, on your walk from tee box to the fairway and have a chat with your caddy and think about other things? Or do you like to stay in the round and thinking about leaderboard and thinking about the next shot all the way up?
No, I mean, it's very mentally draining, physically draining, but probably more so nearly mentally draining, especially in weather like that, because there's a lot more extra calculations to do, calibrating the wind and what club you have to hit. It's not just stand up and hit it from A to B. So there's a lot more plotting around. And I quite enjoy it when it's like that. I like the sort of challenge of that. But yeah, like you said, we could be out there from anywhere from 4.5 to 6 hours. So you can't be 100% switched on all the time. So yeah, you're using those sort of shots, walking to between shots to sort of quiet your mind probably a little bit, make sure you're breathing properly, having a chat with your caddy, having a drink of water, something to eat, all those different things. And yeah, and then once you get to the ball, then it's time to sort of go again.
Yeah. Some players obviously hate the links and hate the wind and hate all that stuff. For others, I mean, it's interesting you say you quite enjoy it. Like, even Jordan Spieth, who, you know, American and has won the Open, he talks about how what he likes about it is the conditions almost give you something to respond to. So, you know, you get really engaged and you feel the wind and you're kind of playing conditions more than you might do stateside. And he says that's lovely. You know, you kind of feel more creative. And obviously Bubba Watson, for instance, hates it, can't wait to get out of there, thinks it's just awful. So that sounds like it's kind of up your alley, and you do enjoy that challenge of feeling the wind and picking a ball flight.
Yeah, I suppose it's probably as well what you're used to. I suppose I've been used to growing up sort of playing in the wind and playing in the rain. And when I went to college over in the States, they always used to laugh when it was a rainy day and they didn't want to practice or understand why I was going out to practice. And I was like, well, if I waited for a calm day and a dry day at home, I could be waiting a while. So, yeah, it's nice to play around with those shots. Sort of, you could be hitting a 6-iron 100 yards or something, just chipping it under the wind or holding up into the wind or whatever. And then you come over here and all of a sudden you're hitting a 6-iron 165 yards. So it's definitely different. And I suppose that's the nice thing with our job. It's I always say it's the best office in the world, but it changes every week. So you go from playing in a gale in Scotland to all of a sudden Arkansas last week that was 35 degrees and hot and humid, and you're trying to hit the ball as high as you possibly can and the ball's stopping within a few feet every time. So yes. Yeah, radically different, but I suppose that's the beauty of golf.
And what's your favourite ball flight, Leona? I mean, do you like to throw it up in the air generally, or a lower ball flight having grown up in Ireland, or what do you tend, what's your go-to?
I hit it generally high enough, I suppose, but then again, playing on the tour, depending on what country we're in, what the grass are like, what the conditions, you have to be very flexible and adapt. And that was the nice thing going to college in the States for 4 years, got sort of a mini glimpse into that of tour life, adjusting to either Bermuda grass or Brent grass or Zoysia or whatever it was, depending on what stage we were in. So yeah, very much adjusting on the fly. And then we get the taste of links golf. Growing up, would have played at all our big tournaments, would have been on links in the amateur game. So now we only get to play it maybe twice a year. So it's always nice to go back and do that again sort of get a little bit more creative probably on links.
It's funny you mentioned the different types of grasses there. So when all of us are sitting at home watching the PGA Tour and the commentators are making a big deal about Bermuda grass this week and it's sticky around the greens and all that stuff, I'm not actually even sure what grass we have in Ireland. You know what I mean? It's just grass, right? So I play and there's grass, and I never ask what type of grass is it. Do you know what grass we predominantly have here?
I suppose the equivalent would be bent grass, which you get up in the northeast of the US. I suppose we call it meadow grass, mixture of meadow grass and, well, my backyard is probably meadow grass and a bit of moss probably. But yeah, it's chipping, I suppose, is the big thing. Probably getting used to that, just a different style. Than at home is a lot of like putting your hands forward, using the leading edge, bump and run, stuff like that. Whereas over here on Bermuda, you have to use the bounce of the club, a lot more lob wedge, stuff like that. And yeah, Bermuda grass can make you look pretty silly pretty quick, regardless of your skill level. So you definitely have to, takes a little bit of practice and a bit of getting used to. I suppose we were lucky in college, we were right in North Carolina, we were on the border of where bent grass and Bermuda grew, so we had both chipping greens. So depending on if the event this week was on Bermuda, we'd practice on the Bermuda greens. Okay. If it was on bent, we'd practice on the bent grass green. So it was quite nice to get used to it and sort of just fiddling around and experimenting with what works.
So is it the club can get stuck in the Bermuda grass more?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to keep accelerating, and yeah, it'll just stick in it. It just digs in. Especially you'll notice at the Tour Championship this week in Eastleigh, we played a college tournament there, and that's Bermuda grass at its finest. The ball just disappears sometimes into it.
So is that why they go at loft then, so they can rip through it a bit more?
Yeah, speed, fast hands. Yeah, bounce and speed, and you have to. You can swing quite fast and quite hard at it, and the ball will still just pop out and not go that far. So you kind of just have to trust that happens. But those guys on the PGA Tour this week, they know what they're doing, I'm sure.
One other aspect, obviously, from Troon was Sofia Popov. I mean, it's hard to think of too many sports where the number 304 in the world can come along and win. You know, it doesn't happen in tennis. You know, Roger Federer, Serena Williams, generally they'll you know, come out on top when they're in their pomp. Like, there's such a volatility about golf if someone catches fire. 304 in the world, Is that the kind of thing you look at and it gives you a little bit of, geez, okay, you know, like anything's possible? Or was Sofia Popov, was she kind of known and dramatically underperforming and 304 was a false position for her?
Yeah, I mean, Sofia's a good friend of mine. I played Junior Solheim Cup with her in 2009 and she won a European championship and she was a national champion when she was at South Carolina or right. Southern California. And yeah, probably went under the radar a bit. She had some health issues, I suppose, and probably didn't make the splash in the pro game that she would have liked or maybe people would have expected. But I think it just sort of testifies to the depth of the fields in golf. There's a very fine line between a few weeks ago she had no status on the LPGA, was playing the Sumatra Tour, playing Cactus Tour, and then all of a sudden now she's a major championship winner. So, yeah, I suppose that's the thing with golf. You can sort of turn things around pretty quickly, and it's inspiring for anybody to look up and say, well, she can turn around that quick. I can do that too. And yeah, I suppose that's one of those weeks that can change your life. And yeah, I think she was a very, very popular winner. I think a lot of people were delighted to see her do well. And that's one of those things with golf, I suppose, that maybe you mightn't see in some other sports.
Mm. Yeah, I got the impression she was a very popular winner. She didn't even falter, like, on the Sunday. I mean, I given everything, I thought, we're going to see a wobble here. There's bound to be. That was really impressive, the way she finished that out.
Yeah, she's a competitive girl, and I suppose anybody sort of that knows her knows she's always had that confidence and in herself. I think I was listening to an interview with Martin Keimer, and that was one of the things he said, that despite everything, she always believed in herself, and she actually believed it, not just saying she did. She actually did. And so that's one of those things in sport that maybe when things are going against you a little bit, you start doubting yourself or whatever. And I suppose if you believe in it and work hard enough, it will sort of come right for you in the end. And you just never know when it's going to be your week. And you just have to be ready to grab that opportunity with both hands when it presents itself. And she definitely did that.
Do you have a strong belief in yourself? Do you feel you've got that going on? Is that something you work on? Like, do you work on your confidence?
Yeah, I think it's something that develops from experience as well, knowing that you practice your shots, whatever it is. If you're working on a certain shot and you do it hundreds and hundreds of times in practice, and then it comes to a moment in a tournament and you pull it off and you go, well, I know I can do this because I've held thousands of these 3-footers, or if it's a 10-yard fade, or if it's whatever it is. So I suppose that's, you practice in those moments to try and pull it off in those big events. And I suppose I've never been one to sort of stand in front of the mirror and go, I can do this. It's more from experience of knowing I can actually do it, and then sort of bring that across to the biggest stage.
So yours is based on the practice and the hard work and knowing that you've done it, and as opposed to in a baseless kind of way, just standing in front of the mirror saying, well, you're great.
Yeah, I think so. I suppose I have my psychology degree, so I know probably the underlying principles of all of that. So maybe I'm a little skeptical of some things, maybe a bit more. But yeah, for me, it was that confidence, knowing that I can do it. I've done it before. I can do it again. Sometimes you need little reminders maybe from other people. But yeah, I suppose that underlying thing of knowing that once you're prepared, and I suppose with something like golf, is all you can do is prepare as best you can. And then ultimately then what happens in the tournament week sort of happens. You can't really control what other people do, what way the golf course is set up, what way the wind or the weather comes in. That's kind of out of your hands. All you can sort of control is how you prepare and how you deal with that.
So you're in your first year on the LPGA tour. And I know you played Arkansas as well last week and finished 79th there. As I understand, things were going reasonably, like, pretty well pre-COVID. You were like 26th on the order of merit before the pandemic arrived. I think there was a top 5 finish, which, you know, suddenly jumps you up 62 places. So it seemed like, you know, you've settled in quite nicely. What is life on the LPGA Tour like? Like, where are you based over there?
Yeah, so it's, yeah, obviously very different. We got in the Australian leg of the tour before everything was shut down, and had some nice momentum going there. And yeah, everything sort of ground to a halt. Was at home in Ireland all through lockdown and all of that. And yeah, we've a week off this week, so I'm in LA this week, and then we go to Palm Springs next week for for the NA, our second major of the year. So looking forward to that. And yeah, I suppose the season's looks radically different now than it did in kicking off in January, but thankful to have a second half of the season, unlike maybe some other sports. And there's still some really good events on the schedule, right all the way up to a week before Christmas, really. So it's going to be pretty hectic. There's a lot squeezed into it, but sort of looking forward to getting back out and playing again week after week. And yeah, I mean, Scotland was very strict. There was a lot of restrictions. There was a bubble hotel. We all stayed in the same hotel, players, caddy, staff. There was hotel, golf course. Weren't allowed to go to restaurants, weren't allowed to go to shops, weren't allowed to do anything. Everything was in the hotel. We're mass temperature checks every day, all of that, all tested. Weren't allowed to leave your hotel room until we were tested on the Sunday, until the results came back. Whereas over here, it's a little bit more lax, I'd say. You're allowed to stay wherever you want.
Donald Trump's doing a really good job, you know. He's on the case. So I'm shocked to hear that.
Yes. So it's definitely a little bit more relaxed over here. Everybody's wearing masks, there's temperature checks, but yeah, it's just maybe not quite as strict as Scotland was, but no positive tests on the tour since I've started. So I suppose that's a good sign. The tour's been doing a really good job of keeping everybody safe and washing their hands and sanitizing everything and all the rest. And then once we get in the golf course, it's pretty much business as usual.
Yeah. And where's home, Leon, over there? Where do you drop the bags? Where are you basing yourself?
Nowhere really. I suppose just going from event to event. Home still. Calvin, I don't know when I'll be home next. I suppose that's the thing with all the quarantines and all of that at the minute. Don't want to go. I suppose if I went home, I'd have to quarantine for 14 days, which is, can't really do that and play on tour. I don't want to risk bringing. Granny lives with us as well, so don't want to really risk bringing Anthony back to her. So yeah, I'll just go from event to event, staying with friends this week, and then I'll go back and visit Duke during my next off week after Portland, and to sort of take it from there and go from event to event till the end of the year, and then maybe look at it getting somewhere over more permanent over here maybe next year when everything settles down a little bit.
Okay. I mean, I guess you must feel pretty settled in the States and the way of life over there. You know, it's not such a culture shock than if you'd been based in university, maybe somewhere over here, or European tour and going over, you know, just even the basics of having a cell phone and, you know, all that, you know, familiarity with driving on the right side of the road and everything. I guess it must feel to some degree home-ish.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose each state is very different. It's nearly like a mini country in itself. Definitely a little bit more comfortable on the East Coast, I suppose. I really enjoyed, I liked North Carolina. It was probably nice going to Duke in that it was only 5,500 students. It was a relatively small university compared to some of the massive ones that are here. So it wasn't too radically different from Cavan, but definitely enjoyed being at home. During lockdown, it was sort of a nice bit of time to actually be home. Probably the longest I've been home in 6 years, probably since I was doing the Leaving Cert. So it was nice to get that bit of time at home, especially when I knew I probably wouldn't get it again probably for a long time again. So but yeah, used to sort of the way of life over here. But I suppose me and my caddy Gary are pretty much trying to stay in our own bubble. There'll not be much going on really outside of sort of where we're staying, back to the golf course, trying to just stay as safe as possible and avoid any unnecessary risks at the minute.
Yeah, because I was going to, I guess it kind of negates the question a touch, because I was curious, you know, you're certainly in the men's tour, when the European players go over to the PGA tour, they will always say it's that bit lonelier, you know, that the big superstars of American golf have their entourages and disappear back to the rented house. Whereas in the European tour, they'll say you go down to the hotel lobby and there are people knocking around for a chat or a coffee or dinner. So I was curious as to how collegiate the women's, you know, the women's PGA tour is. I guess in lockdown and in COVID, it's not really wander around, go to bars and coffee shops and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely has a little bit of a different feel to it. Obviously, we're not allowed to sit in restaurants. Not allowed to go to bars, but probably wouldn't be going to them anyway. So you have to, everything's just to get your food delivered or get it to go. So yeah, it's very much kind of staying in your own little pods and own little bubbles. Unlike the men's tour, there's really no entourages. There's a few players with them, maybe, me not being one of them. So there's no chefs and doctors and physios and coaches and all the rest. So yeah, it's really just me and my caddy Gary. But I suppose that was the nice thing with going to college over here. I've made some really good friends for my 4 years over here. So we can sort of get our food and go and sit in the hotel lobby and eat it, and or eat it outside, or whatever it is. Right. So that makes it sort of pass the time a little bit and sort of bring some sort of normality to the whole situation.
Jeez, it's not exactly rock and roll either, is it?
Yeah, I suppose everybody thinks the life of a professional golfer is quite glamorous and all the rest, flying around the world in private jets. But maybe it is on the men's side, not so much on the ladies' side, I wouldn't think. But still wouldn't trade it for the world.
How have you found the step up in standard? Is there anything jumping out at you in terms of the scoring or the quality of play? Are you feeling, I mean, I'm talking to person who was number one amateur in the world for 135 weeks, so you know what you're doing out there, but how have you found the adjustment?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, I suppose there's a lot more sort of that goes on in a typical tournament week than what in the amateur game, and getting used to all the travel and sort of back-to-back weeks. I suppose in the amateur game you play maybe two events and then have a few weeks off and maybe play another event, and it's a lot more spread out, whereas getting used to going 8-9 weeks in a row definitely was a big adjustment, applying all the different places, having to adjust so quickly to being in Dubai 1 week and then being American and then being all over the place, being in Australia, getting used to the jet lag and all that, and just learning the golf course. I suppose that's the thing with the girls that have been out here maybe 5-10 years, it's a lot of the same golf courses going back to every year, so they know what they're going, they know what they're doing, so trying to learn as much as possible as I go along and kind of treating this year very much as a learning year, trying to get a sort of insight into some of the golf courses that we'll be playing again next year, and so that I can very much hit the ground running next year. And it'll still technically be my rookie year according to the LPGA, but try and start it with a leg up.
Right. So do you, no matter what happens, you get on, you're still on tour next year? Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's... no matter what happens this year, everything just freeze. Sort of priority list and all that, there's no tour school, nothing like that, so nice. Whatever we started January 2020 with, we'll start in the exact same position in January 2021, just so that if people wanted to play, they could play. If there's different restrictions in different countries that people can't get out, can't play, that sort of that pressure, just to, I suppose, make it as fair and as safe for everybody involved. So yeah, very much just kind of making the most of the rest of the year for me.
Yeah, Leona, that's a bit of a bonus, isn't it? Like, you can kind of have a free shot at everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose it's, you've nothing really to lose and everything to gain. I suppose, talking to Sonia Sullivan, as she said, 2020 is just the year to back yourself and go play and enjoy it and just sort of take it all in without having the pressure of trying to keep your card or anything like that. I suppose that's not something you'd really be focusing on anyway. You're kind of trying to finish up as high as possible and let your card and all that sort itself out. But yeah, everything this year is sort of a bonus, I suppose. Probably playing a little bit of catch up in that, I suppose, Ireland and Europe was in a lot more lockdown than obviously people over here. I think golf courses were generally open all year round, talking to people. I think one of the girls from Texas said they were closed for one day or something like that. So a very different sort of situation. So yeah, just trying to catch up as quickly as I can and not put too much pressure onto myself and just get back into the swing of things.
You were stuck chipping out the back garden, not much going on. So and just to kind of a last point, we had Stephanie Meadow on a couple of weeks ago, and she was talking about how her practice has sort of changed a little bit in the last while. She used to be a sucker for hitting a gazillion balls at the range, you know, and she's increasingly just played more golf, even in practice. You know, you can get sucked into obsession with your backswing and you forget about the art of actually scoring, you know. Where are you when it comes to working on your game? Do you have a full-time coach that you see regularly? Is there stuff that you're working on? Give us a kind of flavor of where you are with your game at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Mike would just say O'Grady in Blackwash. Okay. He's been my coach for, I guess, 12, 13 years now. So he knows my swing better than anybody. And generally we keep it pretty simple. There's a few bad habits that I slip into and he'll remind me every so often of them. My caddy knows what to watch out for. And I'll send him videos back and forth. Usually he might come out to an event or two. That'll probably not be possible this year, just with everything. So I suppose that was the great thing with college. Got very much used to learning my own golf swing, understanding my own golf swing, being able to make little tweaks here and there where when needed, and sort of seeing trends of knowing when to spot things. And again, same with college. And I suppose growing up with Lisa, we always were being really competitive in practice, always playing little games against each other, whether it was putting competitions, shipping games, wedge games, wherever it was. Always had to be some sort of consequence to it. I think that's probably what a lot of my practice sort of is centered around. There's always some sort of competitive thing, because that's more like what you're going to get in a tournament. And every day, there's no point going to the range and beating 200, 300, 400 balls. I'll only do that if there's something specific I'm working on my swing that I really need to drill in. But apart from that, it's all sort of target-based, maybe shaping shots, depending on kind of looking towards the tournament that's coming up. If there's certain shots I know I'm going to need, certain clubs I know that I'm going to use, maybe different wedge distances, something like that. And then, yeah, predominantly short game as well, short game and putting. That's really what it all boils down to at the end of the day.
I forgot, of course, Lisa. So, I mean, Jesus, I mean, I'd say you were like killing each other with competitions the whole time. I mean, having a twin sister is the way to do it. What are your bad habits? What is the most common thing Shane will text back and say, you know, you're doing this again?
I suppose a lot of it boils down to basics. A lot of it's ball position alignment. Sometimes they sort of sneak aiming a little bit too left and the ball position gets a little bit back.
It's always
especially when you're moving between different grasses and stuff like that. And yeah, there's a few things. Sometimes I lose my height a little bit in my swing, and or if I get tired, more so maybe like week three, week four of a tournament, he'll go, okay, let's get the posture a little bit stronger, and maybe get the bands out, put them around my knees, get my glutes activated, stuff like that. Fairly simple stuff. There's never any sort of major swing surgery when I'm away, and just keep everything sort of ticking over. Really, I have a few drills, go-to drills that I know I can do to sort of get everything back into the groove again.
It's funny, as a rank bad amateur who plays with lots of rank bad amateurs, you should listen to us talking about our swings, and it's like we're talking like, you know, wrist cock and at the plane angle and all this stuff. And you talk to pros and they're just like ball position, alignment, aim, all the boring basics. It's a lesson to us. So you're major coming up, I guess, and rest of the year is to get as much golfing as you can and have, this is a free shot at it, you know, try and nick a win somewhere. That's kind of where you're at.
Yeah, basically, it's nice to be back out. We've got a couple of majors left in the schedule, try and qualify for all of them, and yeah, just try and make the most of it, really. Take it all in my stride. I suppose there back in March, April, May time, it was looking like we mightn't get any golf in, so enjoying being out here, really, and sort of grateful for the opportunities that we do have to play and travel the world and do all of that, and yeah, try and work my way up as high I can in the world rankings, and sort of put myself in those positions to contend in some events and sort of bank all those experiences.
Great. Well, listen, the very best of luck with it. KPMG ambassador, 20 by 20 ambassador as well. The 20 by 20 series has been a huge success. So keep it going. Might check in at the end of the year, and hopefully we've a few good results to talk about. Leona Maguire, thanks so much.
Thanks, Joe.
OTB Sports Golf Weekly with Now TV. Watch Sky Sports on the Now TV Sky Sports Pass and watch BT Sport and Premier Sports on the Sports Extra Pass.